TED Audio Collective.
So, Francis, this morning I was looking at the actual data around layoffs because there's so much anxiety, understandable anxiety, and so many assumptions we make about this experience. There's a company out there called Revelio Labs that is trying to ground some of these assumptions in the data. And they looked at this question of how quickly people were actually getting rehired in this environment. Because, of course, the fear is I'm
laid off and never
going to work again, or it's going to take a long time. And these are scary existential questions. So as of late December, tech workers who are being laid off right now at higher rates than other parts of the economy, tech workers are finding new jobs within 3 months at a rate of 72%.
That's encouraging.
So it's encouraging.
Yeah, great.
And higher than I expected.
It's higher than I expected as well.
The other stat I saw that I thought was really helpful was that 40% of Americans have been laid off or terminated from a job at least once. And, you know,
wow.
When we're going through it, when we're experiencing it, and we think it's a sign that there's something very wrong, we think that it's a rare event. It's not rare. It's what it means to participate in American capitalism. And you are going to be okay. I'm Ann Morris. I'm a company builder and leadership coach.
I'm Frances Fry. I'm a professor at the Harvard Business School and your wife.
Most important.
Most important, yes.
And this is Fixable from the TED Audio Collective.
We believe that meaningful change happens fast. Everything is fixable. And good solutions are usually just one conversation away.
Frances, today we got a message from Delaney. Delaney is not her real name. She's got a great job in tech, but is starting to lose some motivation. So let's hear directly from her.
My entire team was laid off except for me. I feel like I should be more grateful for the place where I am. My problem is that I want to do something great, but I'm not inspired by any of the work. So how do you decide to cut your losses and take the risk to do something that's more aligned with you, knowing what a dollar's worth, having been poor before? How do you decide?
Francis, what's your initial reaction?
My initial reaction is, how do you know when it's okay to jump to a less secure place? I have a lot of empathy. As someone who also grew up on the low end of the socioeconomic hierarchy, I totally get it. Like, when you have been without means, when you have been hungry, it feels like irresponsible to take the decision where you might be in need as opposed to someone who can provide. You know, Anne, I was thinking, this episode is quite a bit different for us. And it also is more real in some ways. Fixing is messy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is messy. It's a little dreary. There might be points of conflict. So I would say that we're going to get into some real issues here, and it's going to maybe feel a little bit uncomfortable along the way. But this is reality, and we get to a really good place at the end.
Hackers and cybercriminals have always held this kind of special fascination.
Obviously, I can't tell you too much about what I do.
It's a game. Who's the best hacker? And I was like, well, this is child's play.
I'm Dina Temple-Raston. And on the Click Here podcast, you'll meet them and the people trying to stop them.
We're not afraid of the attack. We're afraid of the creativity and the intelligence of the human being behind it.
Click Here. Stories about the people making and breaking our digital world.
AI machine.
Satellite. Engine ignition.
Click here.
And liftoff.
Click here every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Delaney. Welcome to Fixable.
Thanks for having me.
What would make this conversation most shamelessly, selfishly helpful to you?
Yeah, I shamelessly would
love the step-by-step plan for how to occupy my time in the next year and a half or 2 years that I want to give myself to keep working at this giant corporation that sets me off on being an entrepreneur for myself.
Awesome.
Wonderful.
Well, let's start with what, tell us about the work you're doing now for this big giant corporation.
Yeah. So I work for a major tech company, which has just done some huge soulless layoffs that pretty much wrecked the last vestige of hope and like loyalty that I may have had for this company. I've been a very capable, enthusiastic, creative, imaginative, hardworking employee. So people say, oh, come with me on this big idea that I have, because you're going to help me get there. And I go, sure. And then I'm following someone else's dream and I'm spending all my energy on their vision. And by the end of the day, all I want to do is play The Sims and dissociate into a made-up reality.
How long have you been there?
4 years.
Okay.
And 4 years ago, I was an English teacher and was very invested in the vocation part of teaching. I taught ninth grade and I loved them. I love 14-year-olds.
I love that age.
They're so great.
We have one of those in the house with us.
They're the best. They're truly the best. I loved it. But I was broke. And I had this incredible opportunity fall into my lap where in the middle of the spring semester at the school where I worked, a friend of mine who had worked at this company for the last few years and who I'd been, you know, kind of under the wing of as she tried to teach me ways of working in that company's mindset, and I'd applied many times and been rejected. She called me and said, hey, I'm trying to start up an education program within this company, and I'm 3 weeks from going on maternity leave. And they finally gave me headcount. And I don't trust anyone else to start up an education org except for you. So I want to hire you as a contractor. And if you just trust me, we'll spend the next year getting you converted to be a full-time employee. And I was like, when do you get this opportunity?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I entered this corporation with all these adults.
And lots not of adults children. In corporations.
Yeah.
Very few 14-year-olds.
Very few. And like the vibes were so different. You know, I was not the authority anymore the way that I was in a classroom. And then those first 6 months were really hard because I didn't have an ally. I was learning corporate world, politics, energy. I learned fast. When I became a full-time employee, I started to believe that, like, actually, I've got a really good thing going on. I'm pretty valuable to this group. But it turned out that the job that she had offered for me wasn't quite as inspiring or awesome as I had hoped. Instead of really being about transformative education, it was about compliance, you know, and making sure that the people in this department, which was a privacy and security department, were following regulations, basically. So I spent 2 years in this education org. Then my other friend, who I've networked and made friends with over this 2 years, he says, hey, your education job sounds boring and frustrating. Come work with me on product. So I follow him and his vision. And this team was a complete sea change. Like, it was a lot of, I would say, like, to put it kindly, it was Silicon Valley on steroids. Like, it was a bunch of men who were like, I understand women. I've got a wife, you know, and just comments like that constantly. So again, like, another element of my illusion is shattered. Because I start to see this gross culture. But I was starting to gain confidence. I can do this. I belong here. They need me. So as soon as my brain clicks into this, my company lays people off. And they lay off my entire team, except for me. So every meeting that I'd had in the last 6 months was now meaningless. Every project that I had worked on, gone. And not only that, but our VPs and senior leaders had no plans for what to do with the people who remained. My manager is like, honestly, just chill. You're fine.
Delaney, what's the case against just leaving? Like if you're feeling this degree of friction, why stick around?
I think they call them the golden handcuffs. Having been a teacher, to be in this position where I'm making four times as much money, to know that at some point in the next year, I'd like to get pregnant and it would be great to have maternity leave covered by this company, makes me go, it's not practical to leave now. But I know that I want to leave. So how do I maximize this time? How do I figure out in this time how to reinvent and become the next thing?
Can I give you the punchline? Yeah. You can't make the company the villain in the story. Because you can't be in relationship with any integrity with this entity if they are a cartoon version in the story that you're telling and now living within.
For me, it's less that they're a villain. They're a place where I'm getting the means with which to jump into the next self. The layoffs were almost like this freedom, like liberation, because it was just so clear. They don't really care about us. They're a corporation, not a human, not a family. I'm not going to lose myself in the work. What I don't know is how to now take the things that I care about and turn those into the main event and not the after hours event. A little bit about those. I'm a painter.
Cool.
And my paintings have been the place where I've found so much self. Like, life feels so big when I'm painting.
What's in the way of you doing that right now?
Time.
Can I play back the story?
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
a little. And Francis, please jump in and stop your wife.
No.
Yeah. But it sounds like you have made a fair exchange with this organization where you get a subset of things and the organization gets a subset of things. So you're getting the security that you crave and didn't get when you were in the classroom. That makes sense for you at this point in your life. The organization gets an awesome, creative, adaptable employee who they can put in lots of different environments, and she seems to step up to the challenge. And that contribution has been tested. This is a difficult environment to keep a job in tech. You have managed to do that. That is a testimony to your talent and resilience contribution. Help me understand the tension point. Is it that there were trade-offs that you made that you don't feel great about and want to figure out how to feel better at them so you can stay for another 2, 3, 4 years? Or is it that you're looking for a graceful exit? Just from a practical standpoint, I'm struggling to find a friction point that I actually
believe
by. I don't believe you have a problem.
Where my problem is I don't feel like I have enough space and time to invest properly in the art dream and in what that world looks like. Because I don't have an audience. I don't have a website. Like, I need to be able to invest significant time in this.
I wonder if you can find any bandwidth in the current situation you're in. Like, where you're getting paid very well, but nobody's asking you to do anything.
Trust me, you should see some of the pieces I've been making. I mean, I've sat here and I've been creating and making, and it's what really motivated me of like, I should talk to these people because this isn't going to be the case
forever.
It
sounds like the perfect fucking situation. I'm saying this with so much love and respect in my heart. You are on the payroll being paid still 4 to 6, probably now 6x what you were making in the classroom. No one today is expecting you to do anything. You're waiting for your next assignment. This week should have been the greatest week of your life. You can make art all day while you wait for the memo that says, please do something for the company that's paying you. Why is this not the greatest moment in your professional life?
Why isn't this just a gift from the heavens?
It has an expiration date on it. It's like I have all these pieces, but they're not attached yet to a structure, to a center.
Do you want this company to be funding your art, or do you want to jump off the cliff and try to fund it yourself?
This podcast is supported by Tools and Weapons, the podcast hosted by Microsoft Vice Chair and President Brad Smith. Each episode features insight you won't find anywhere else from the center of the conversation surrounding emerging technologies like AI. Right now on the podcast, you can hear a special episode where Brad Smith lays out Microsoft's vision for a vibrant marketplace driving the new AI economy. To hear more, follow or subscribe to Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith, wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't want to jump off a cliff.
Okay, so we're taking that off the table. So that's door number two. That's door number two, and to go and live the life of an artist, which people do every day. There's insane security trade-offs.
This is why I'm like, I think there's like 2 years. I really think there's about a year and a half, 2 years. I think there's, one of the problems is that I commit myself to things. Like,
that doesn't sound like a problem.
Well, then how do I use these 2 years where I will not be investing 40 hours a week in the business that I want to start? Every piece of business advice I've ever heard or seen is something about like, hustle, you gotta go all in on making your dream happen. And like, I won't be able to, because I will still give my attention to this place where I'm being paid.
May I step in here?
Yeah, please.
So I'm watching the two, and I feel my wife's frustration, and then I hear your frustration. So I'm gonna, you're choosing to stay with the company. I'm going to give you my punchline. Mm-hmm. I think you have to fall in love with the company for this to work. So when you got on the call, you painted a pretty villainous organization. And by the time we got to the end of your story, this is a very benevolent organization to you. I think you're going to have to fall in love with the company and with your situation at the company if you want the next 18 months to work. I think a cynical transactional relationship isn't going to work. I can feel it with you. Some people can do cynical transactional things. I don't think you can.
I don't think you can, Delaney.
So yeah. I'm going to take that off the table, which means you're going to have...
Which is our greatest compliment, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. So if you want to work at this company in good faith and accept their money and their benefits, I want you to figure out how you can add delicious value to it. I want you to honor what they are and what they're doing, because you're accepting their salary. And you're talking about it in hours, but I would rather talk about it in energy. So if you are depleted at the end of the day, you're not doing anything else. But if you are energized at the end of the day, you all of a sudden have time. So how can we make what you're doing energy producing as opposed to energy depleting? So I would recommend that we just completely reverse the narrative.
Can I take another swing?
Now you take another swing.
I want to start with the list of attributes that you present to us. And I'll start with me, and then Prince, maybe you can fill in. Savvy, sophisticated thinker, super creative, intelligent. I have a hard time believing the story that in the past, 4 years, you have only really worked in the service of other people's hopes and dreams. It feels like you are very much in touch with what it is that lights you up about the world. And so then where my coaching brain goes is, why is this human invested in this version of the story? Like, what is underneath? And is it that she hasn't forgiven herself for the factoring security into her decisions about the work to do, which is a beautiful choice for you, for the child you're contemplating bringing into the world? I want to just honor that that is a choice that is not just rational and cold, and but also really beautiful. That's an investment in taking care of you. And I want to invite you to have some compassion and forgiveness and deep respect for the part of you that demanded that she be fed and nourished in that way.
It's been very challenging to, and I apologize for the emotion in my voice. It's been a challenge to shift identities from being a classroom teacher trying to make the world a better place, and then to go into an environment where being promoted, getting money, it's hard to justify the work to my moral self. It's like it was just starting to percolate. I was made a lead on the team, and then they're all just taken away. I think to myself, like, is this just a wake-up call from the universe? Like, keep your distance. Don't fall in love with it because it doesn't love you back. And it doesn't have to. That's not its job.
Well, Delaney, I feel like we're finally in
the real
situation. Real conversation.
Yeah.
So thank you for going on that ride with us and for showing up vulnerably. I have a lot more to say, but we need to take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, Delaney, I'm going to play back what we hear the issue is for you, and you tell us if this feels right. You were in a position where you correctly diagnosed that there was a gap between what you wanted to be doing, probably your core value system, and the role you had initially been cast in. You skillfully found an exit from that role into this role that was more energy producing and more aligned with the work you wanted to do and your core values. You just experienced a shock to that solution, which is that your team went away and now there's a lot of uncertainty about that role and you're trying to figure out what your next move is on this chessboard of Delaney's life. Is that a reasonable summary?
Mm-hmm. And you have articulated two paths forward. One is close yourself off so you don't get burned, so don't fall in love again. And it's like when you coach somebody after a breakup, I'm never going to get close to someone again. And we don't want to give all of that power away to the other thing. And so I don't want a random shock in the world to influence your trajectory of falling in love. So I want us to explore at least the possibility of not doing the closed off version of you, but perhaps doing the awesome version of you and realizing that you need to practice having some self-imposed limits so that if you work till midnight and all day on the weekends, try to think of ways that you don't have to do that. So I wouldn't lessen the love, I would increase the operational capability.
But let's get super practical for
sure.
Delaney. Where does your mind go on her options in this moment?
So listen, you're given a reset moment and you're going to mourn the people that have left and the trauma that has occurred. But I would use it as a chance to refuel, put the oxygen mask on yourself and use it as a reset. You're choosing to have a hustle and a side hustle, which I love. And honor that and do it with integrity. And I don't want you to have regret that you took money for something you didn't earn. So how can you do both? Which is, how can I accomplish what it takes other people 10 hours to do in 6 hours? Now, I believe if you put that challenge in there, you could do that.
I think your framing was beautiful, Frances. I want you to, in this gift of 4, 5, 6, 7 days, start to think about what role within the company would be energizing to you. What's your job description? Who are these other resources that you would work with? Because these people are sources of energy for you. And I love that framing, Francis, just a gut task. Is this task energizing to me? Is this human energizing to me? Is this daily experience energizing to me? So shamelessly, like, get out the piece of paper and really write your own job description. And so when someone calls you, and they might not put it in this form, it might not sound like an invitation. It might be like, oh, Delaney, this is what you're going to do next. But in fact, it is. This is a negotiation. Because in most cases, you're an at-will employee. That also gives you tremendous agency and freedom. You can say, no, thank you. This is not going to work for me, and I'm going to leave. But I want you to have a lot of clarity, because there is something important to you in this relationship right now, is that there is a tremendous amount of security.
And so if you have your job description already done, so it's not your emotional reaction, but you already know what you want, negotiate for those things. So if we had to just role play right now, what is the role you would like?
In the role that I make for myself, I get to share wisdom. That wisdom is not provided, but it is questions. It's discussion. I want to work with my peers to expand their ideas, become better collaborators, think effectively through problems together, and not wait to be told what to do. So my role has some kind of that piece in it.
Delaney, this is great. You have my attention. Now I'm role playing the other side of this conversation. I have unveiled your new job, and it's called Super Program Manager. Congratulations. What you just described is actually not on my list of program manager necessarily. So tell me how what you just described connects to the mission of the company.
So if I'm staying where I am, then you need these kinds of discussions, because there are 51 products at this company, and they all get created and shipped in different ways.
That makes it
really hard to send out a unified product to users. So you need me to bring together the product managers and the UX designers to talk about what makes their products similar. Let's talk about it, because handing down directions on high from these different silos isn't working, clearly, as you just fired a whole bunch of people because of inefficiencies.
You just used the magic word, because this is the year of efficiency, Delaney. It sounds like you're going to make this whole journey
more efficient. And more effective.
And I'm not going to do it by being the person who knows all the things, because I don't. Let me bring you together, because I know I can facilitate that conversation. That's where my expertise is. It's in the facilitation.
Delaney, how do you feel in your body having this conversation?
I feel the groove, because this is the expertise that I've earned since I was 20 years old and started working in a classroom. Because I didn't have to know the answers to the questions I was giving. I just had to set up the circumstances that enabled a conversation to happen.
For what it's worth, I feel like I am having a conversation with your highest and best self right now. And so I'm super excited about what you just articulated. It also happens to align with the fears and anxieties of every tech leader that we know, that this is a mission critical problem that needs to be solved. You know, the homework we're going to leave you with is to really use writing as a tool for thinking here, but really put this down in a form that will help you think through it in a structured way, but that also that someone else could consume, so that you can have this conversation in a fast-moving environment when these decisions are being made. What's your reaction to that?
It resonates. as I shared before, the organization did not have a plan for any of the people left behind by the layoffs. And when I went and talked to this chief of staff person, I mentioned some of these things to her that I like. You know, I'm a strategic mind. I'm great at hosting conversations. I bring people together. I ask important questions. I get people talking.
You see an opening to create order in the chaos and do it in a way that's gonna light you up. You're the only one with the information to put that equation together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Delaney, that beautiful, creative artist inside of you is not being left behind in this scenario. And that's the other part of the challenge is how do you write this job description in a way where she has a reason to show up? Yeah. Maybe not every minute of every day, but there are ways to do this that are creative and generative and help you build a world that's a little better today than it was yesterday without you making such a severe security trade-off.
I feel like I have some work to do over the next couple of days, which is nice. I think that this kind of approach, I have faith that it will help me at least solve the other practical need I have, which is to find joy in the work that I do during the day.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that if I have this energy, that the outcome of having a job where I'm thriving is that at the end of the day, I do have that energy to devote to the side hustle. That's the dream.
We guarantee it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we can guarantee it.
Thank you.
Phew. I got a sense that I could sit in on your private coaching sessions. You were super direct and you broke through. So that was pretty mesmerizing on my end to witness. But let's think about the generalizable lesson of it.
Here's what I'll say. For people left behind after a layoff, I think there are so many complex emotions that come to the surface. It really strikes at our most fundamental fears and anxieties. Am I going to be okay? Am I enough? Am I worthy? I think these questions that lurk in the background, and I think it is important to remember wherever you are in the story, so much is happening that has nothing to do with you. And so where she started was, this is a bad company and I was like seduced into, wasn't credible, but it was also a very understandable reaction to the situation. Yeah. That I think happens all the time.
And if that's the diagnosis, what I love about the prescription that we finally got to is that when all of these things feel like they're happening to you, how do you pivot from reactive to proactive?
These are mere mortals making decisions. And they don't have all the information.
They do not.
And so to be active in answering the question, what is the best use of you? These are very dramatic moments to do that. There's also an opportunity to do that
all the time,
all day, every day.
Yes.
And yeah. So really thinking about your role in co-producing.
The best use of you.
The best use of you is an opportunity that all of us have at any point in a company's life cycle.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We would love to include you next time. Please reach out to us, email at fixable@ted.com or call us at 234-FIXABLE. That's 234-349-2253. Fixable is brought to you by the TED Audio Collective. It's hosted by me, Frances Fry.
And me, Anne Morris. Our team includes Isabel Carter, Constanza Gallardo, Lydia Jean Cott, Grace Rubenstein, Sarah Nix, Jimmy Gutierrez, Michelle Quint, Corey Hagem, Alejandra Salazar, Ban Ban Chang, and Roxanne Highlash. Jake Gorski is our mix engineer.
We'll be bringing you new episodes of Fixable every week, so make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And one more thing. If you can, please take a second to leave us a review. We love hearing from our listeners. See you soon.